Welcome to Destiny. Now here's your host, Cliff Dunning.
This week we are concluding our look at the Akashic Fields, the Akashic Records, with a practitioner of the Akashic Records, someone who not only accesses them herself, but also teaches others. And what better way to learn about how to connect the resources of the Akashic field than work with somebody who teaches others how to access and use the Akashic field. Now, you're going to hear different aspects of people tapping into this unique field. And the first thing that comes to my mind, and you may feel the same way, is, isn't this the intuition that people get? Isn't this the muse that artists tap into when they have the aha moment and they're composing or they're painting or they're playing live and it's just coming through naturally and they're just like shifted into this alternative field? I think the Akashic touches on this, but as we'll hear today, it's actually much, much more profound. And when we begin talking about people like Edgar Cayce, this guy was mind-blowing in his ability to see and extract a person's background thousands and thousands of years ago. Now, remember, Cayce was an eloquent spokesperson for a place known as Atlantis. And we're going to hear actually a recording on Earth Ancients on Saturday of him actually giving a reading, which is, I think, is pretty cool. But he was able to tap into this place known as Atlantis and view an individual's lifetime or multiple lifetimes. And you can hear, you can read about some of these activities these individuals had as engineers, as scientists, as priestess in temples and things like that. Fascinating read. If you really are interested in Cayce, you can get a book called Mysteries of Atlantis Revisited. It was written by Edgar Casey's son, and his name was Edgar Evan Cayce. It was written about 30, 40 years ago. You can get it on Amazon for probably, I mean, you can get a used copy for like $4 or $5, but it actually has excerpts from readings where individuals had these Atlantis lifetimes and were, I mean, it was very, very advanced society. I mean, it's really a little frustrating as somebody who studies the ancient past, that we don't find more information and ruins of this time period, which, you know, ended 10,500 years ago. But goes way, way back. I mean, the early inception of Atlantis is in the hundreds of thousands of years. And when you start talking like that in those numbers, it's mind-blowing. It's just insane. And this is why underwater archaeology, which is still in its infancy in many ways, is going to be the key. And we'll hear from Greg Little Saturday. That show is not to be missed on his discovery of evidence of Atlantis using Edgar Cayce's Akashic readings on individuals who lived in Atlantis. So don't miss that. But today we are talking about your ability, your tapping in to your own Akashic records from an expert who has been practicing and traveling the world and teaching aspects of Akashic record access or readings. So I think you're going to find it quite unique. Now, you know, a lot of people go, well, this is a little too much for me, Cliff. I just don't feel that it applies to my life. And when people say that, this is how I reply. Wouldn't it be great to know how to navigate the problems of your life? Wouldn't it be good to understand your relationships, business, personal relationships, your relationships with family, kids, things like that? what the dynamics are behind that. If you could decode the problems you have in your life and navigate them so they're smoother, so you're not in crisis, or you're not having setbacks that are so devastating that you're just, you know, frustrated. If you had access to that knowledge, wouldn't that be a plus? Well, I can say that when you begin working with intuition, when you look at the Akashic records in the manner that we're going to hear about today, it is a guide for you. It's a guide for you to begin working in this lifetime for more success, for smoother relationships. And that's what we're all about. As a human being, we are all about relationships. So look at it with an open mind today. Take a look and consider what is being said, how it can apply to you. And, you know, don't dismiss it summarily just because, you know, you're not a person who meditates. I mean, you don't need to be a person that meditates. This is really the foundation for destiny. These are these tools I keep talking about, tools for transformation, where you have access to techniques that can make your life easier, make it more rewarding, and help provide you with the insight as to what you're doing, how you're going about doing it, and being successful, having good relationships, having a comfortable and rewarding life. So, as always, we have conversations on cannabis with Dr. Pepper Hernandez. This week, we are answering your questions, and she will provide some fascinating looks at how to utilize and benefit from using cannabis. So, a full program for you, and a look into the Akashic records. All right, we're checking in with Dr. Pepper Hernandez, and that is Conversations on Cannabis. And this week we have some questions from you, our listeners, regarding cannabis. And so, hey, Pepper, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Cliff. How are you?
I'm great. Weather's great. Things are good. All right, let's get right into it. The first one is from a guy named Kentucky Jack. I wonder where he's from. Weed is illegal in my state. How can I experience some of the strains you suggested? You mentioned going elsewhere, a location that has legal MJ, but what does that entail? So it sounds to me he's talking about a cannabis tourism or a cannabis vacation. What do you say?
Yeah, there are so many cannabis vacation destinations,
right?
And they're popping up all over the place. So if he's in... Where are we thinking he's from?
Well, his tagline is Kentucky Jack.
Okay. So we're not certain if he's from Kentucky or not, but if he is, there are some places that I am actually searching out because this is my jam. So this is a great question, Kentucky Jack. Thanks for asking. Oklahoma is fairly close to you, and they have some amazing things happening. One of the very first ever cannabis resorts in Oklahoma, I happened to be able to set upon for a weekend about, I don't know, 6 months ago. And it was great. You could smoke anywhere on the property. And the cool thing was, is they had a dispensary right across the street that you could go, you could purchase anything that you want. Luckily, I asked the right questions and I was able to go and tour the grow facilities, also the kitchen where they made some of the edibles, and then able to sample a lot of the flower they had growing there. And I would then go across to the resort, which was a very fun rustic cabin situation. So you can choose what kind of places that you want, right? You can go to hotels, you can do vacation rentals, rooms, really high-end spas and things, or really just low-key relaxing out in the country atmosphere. So there's a lot of things that you can do in the cannabis sphere. And those people who are looking for cannabis destination travel, I mean, this is really my jam. So I'll talk about this all day. You can find places to book for different states. And there are a couple different apps that you can find.
So there is an app. Cool.
There are several out there that you can check out. And really, it's about finding out where you want to go, what state you want to go to. Some of the closer states that I would probably say in the U.S. to look at: Colorado, Alaska, Washington, Oregon, Oklahoma, California. These states are going to have things like this pop up for people. If you want to go a little further, Uruguay, Jamaica, Amsterdam, of course, but they're asking people not to come currently for this particular reason, you know, just because of the COVID restrictions at the time that we're in right now. Right. But there are so many places out there that you can go. So it really just depends on how far you want to go, what your budget is, and just find the nearest state closest to you. Then look for something kind of either some kind of bed and breakfast or a cannabis retreat that you can go check out their local strains, and you can find edibles and you can find education for edibles right there in that home state.
That is so cool. Now, I wonder, is like Airbnb moving to this area, or is that like too up and up for them to even deal with?
Well, there is a app that's similar to Airbnb, and it has, I'm not certain what it is exactly. I think it has something to do with 420 and Airbnb, but you can look those two words up and find an app. But I don't think Airbnb itself has a branch just yet, but there is one in development from a different company.
Right. Yeah. I would think that, cannabis tourism is a growing phenomenon simply because, especially in the United States, there's so many states that are still illegal. And if you want to try, I mean, I talk about this in my book, Cannabis and Sexual Ecstasy for Men, is get away, set up a weekend, and, you know, try these strains and be comfortable that you're in an area that's not going to bust you. You can enjoy it in the comfort of your room and still have room service and have an area where you can hang out. So that's a really good one. Fantastic. Okay. Let's do the next one. You ready?
Yep.
Okay. It's from Tina. Tina says, love the show. My life is so stressful and depressing, and I have developed a sleep disorder. Would microdosing cannabis be helpful for anxiety? Also, what kind of cannabis would you suggest to help?
Okay. Hi, Tina. Yeah, this is a common question that I get with a lot of medical patients, honestly, Cliff. And I just want to start off by sharing with the listening audience what microdosing is. Okay. So microdosing is the action or practice of taking or administering a very small amount of whatever their choice is, whether it is mushrooms or cannabis, or, you know, ayahuasca, like whatever that minor, minuscule amount is of that, then it's being tested for its benefit in the body, okay? Minimizing undesirable side effects. So when we're doing small amounts of something, we can then add to it and find that like equilibrium, that balance that we want. And so, yes, I would suggest microdosing cannabis for pretty much anything that you're going to try if you're a newbie. And we will have a whole show on microdosing itself. But I think it's a really, really great idea. And you can do microdosing for sleep or for anxiety. I personally have microdosed until I got to a particular level. And now I wouldn't really call it a microdosing anymore because I do exactly how much I need for myself every single day for anxiety and also for sleep. Now, with that being said, Tina, we definitely need our situations to be calm. We need mental and emotional practice. So, you know, all these things, there's so many things. It's very holistic. So if I share one thing with you, it's not going to be, you know, the end all be all. We want to make sure everything else is great as well. Your food, your nutrition, your supplementation, your vitamins, your minerals, all those have to be in check. Okay. From there though, we can look into the cannabis realm. There are terpenes and cannabinoids that are specific for anxiety. So some of those terpenes, if you were looking at a dispensary, say you're in a legal state and you can go into a dispensary, you can ask for terpenes. Alpha pinene, linalool is one of my favorites, which you hear me talk about all the time. Myrcene, which is found in almost every strain of cannabis. Right. And beta-caryophyllene. Those are some really, really, really great ones that you can have for anxiety. You could also use them for sleep.
Okay. Can you give the some names of strains?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I'll just tell you the ones that I use specifically. And the reason why I say look at the profile, look for the terpenes more than just the strains is because we want to make sure from seed to sale that that is really the strain, right? Because sometimes you can go into dispensaries and they may not have what I have suggested. So it's more about the terpenes. But I have found ACDC, Tsunami, Harlequin, and then there's a cross of Harley Sue, which is Harlequin and Tsunami. Mm-hmm. Those are the three or four that I depend on often for anxiety issues in the middle of the day and also for sleeping at night. There's plenty of others. If you're having a really hard time sleeping, those Kush varieties are better because Kush are really, really heavy. But those are also going to be heavy in THC, so you definitely want to just do those at night. But of course, this is all for educational purposes only. And to really dial something in, I'd suggest someone talk to a cannabis therapy consultant.
Right. That's a good point. All right. Our next question comes from Ruth. Ruth says, I've had migraines since a young age. What should I do? What strains do I choose? And where do I go? And that's it. So she didn't even say where she's. Why don't you give us a quick look at it from a legal state? And I guess, unfortunately, if she's in an illegal state, she'd have to do a cannabis tourist act and find a state that is legal.
Yes, Ruth would have to go on a cannabis vacation. And, you know, a lot of people I have spoke with who needed to get away and try cannabis for things such as epilepsy or cancer or migraines or any kind of physical ailment, discomfort, they have traveled to states where it's legal and spent a month to see if it worked for them.
Wow.
And
Yeah, that's cool.
I've talked to a lot of cannabis medical patients who needed my help in navigating that situation. And they had already tried something like that. So that's not unheard of. People are absolutely doing that. Mm. For Ruth, we're going to go about this as if it is a legal state that she is talking about.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, in the future, if anyone's writing into you, Cliff, we may have them, you know, specify, are they in a legal state or they're not? Because that's going to make our questions
easier.
Let's just
say that right now, if you have a question regarding usage and you're in an illegal state, it's always going to be a cannabis tourism suggestion by Dr. Pepper or myself. Obviously, if you're in a legal state, it's a lot easier for her to address your questions more specifically, which you would do on that. You can do now, Dr. Pepper, with some strain suggestions. And I mean, migraines are probably something that you have dealt with in the past, haven't you?
Oh, many times. And we want to look at this as a nervous system issue.
Okay.
Also stress related. So, I mean, cannabis isn't going to cure everything. If you have a stressful life environment and that is really the cause of the issue, cannabis is only going to be a band-aid, such as a pharmaceutical would be. Yeah. So I'd always want to look at all of those things. So the listeners need to recognize that they are asking questions to a naturopath and a board-certified holistic health practitioner, which I'm going to suggest those things first. Also, migraines. That's typically magnesium and a lack of just water. So make sure that you're uptaking those things, Ruth. And then if you are wanting to really look into cannabis as a bonus piece, I would honestly suggest a topical, a really, really good topical.
Yeah.
On the base of the neck and around the forehead. I would say to be using that on a pretty regular basis, especially a transdermal if you do not want to feel any kind of psychoactive effects. If you want to feel psychoactive effects and you have the luxury of being able to stay home or to relax and not really engage, or you don't feel you feel comfortable being altered, then OG Kush is probably one of the best medical cannabis strains for migraines. It is strong. It has a very high THC content, but there again, any of those THC Kush varieties are going to be really, really dense in THC content. If you don't want those and you want something a little bit more non-psychoactive, you want something that's higher in the CBD, ACDC. It doesn't sound like a strain for preventative migraines, but it is one of the best CBD strains for that, or cultivars, because it reduces inflammation. And when we reduce inflammation in the body, which, side note, do not consume foods that are inflammatory. When we're reducing that and we're using this particular cultivar for migraines without the psychoactive high, we can see huge benefits from it. It also helps with combating anxiety and depression, that particular strain. So that one's got a lot of bonuses.
Yeah. You as a physician, though, wouldn't you take a history to see what the person's lifestyle is like and maybe their food intake and what their work life is about, and maybe even some personal references about what their stress levels are?
Absolutely. It is about physical, mental, spiritual, and emotional well-being. Right. As a holistic health practitioner, we need to look at all of those things. And if people are doing what's right for them in every one of those situations, then we look at cannabis. That's the next step. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think, oh, we're just going to run to cannabis and that's going to solve our issues, and we can go back to regular scheduled program, meeting, fighting with your spouse and consuming, you know, frozen pizzas. That's not going to work. You know, it's just not going to work. So you have to be ready to integrate everything and get more aligned with what's best for your physical body, because we are really just these physical bodies. You know, we're spirits in these physical vessels. We're just here for a moment. And so we have to treat these just as well as we treat our cars, if not better. But cannabis can be a huge benefit to really aligning ourselves properly.
Cool. All right. If you have any questions in the future for Dr. Pepper, send it to cliff@earthancients.com. We have a website and some more information that's being developed. So eventually we'll have a destiny.com email address. But if you have questions regarding anything to do with cannabis, send it to me and we will answer them here on the program. Also, Dr. Pepper has an excellent website. Go to drpepperhernandez.com. Her website is excellent for answering questions, giving you insight. There's articles, there are videos, and you can go to YouTube and see original content from Dr. Pepper. Go to Dr. Pepper Hernandez there also and check it out. All right. Excellent as always. And Dr. Pepper, we will talk to you next week.
Thanks, Cliff.
So we conclude this week on our look at the Akashic Field, the Akashic Records, the Akasha, with a talk with someone who's actually accessing the Akashic Records, someone who has worked with it, understands it, and actually has lessons and teaches people how to access it on their own. My guest today is Maureen J. St. Germain. She is the founder of Transformational Enterprises and Akashic Record Guides International, an internationally recognized teacher and intuitive. She also is the author and musician of 15 guided meditation CDs. She's written 4 books. In fact, her latest book is Beyond the Flower of Life. The book we're going to talk about today is called Opening the Akashic Records, Meet Your Record Keepers, and Discover Your Soul's Purpose. This is exactly what we need after getting the philosophy, getting the scientific background. So we want to welcome Maureen to the program. Hey, welcome.
Hi, thank you. And thank you for the great opening. This book actually won 2 awards from the Coalition of Visionary Resources. One was, it was the gold winner, meaning the best-selling book that they had. And then it was also won in its category. And so I'm very proud of this book. And what's so funny is it was published in Chinese first.
Oh, my God.
And then picked it up. Yeah.
Is there a market in China for the Akashic Records?
Uh-huh. I have been teaching in China for about 6 years. And I have a very strong connection with China. I've taught all over the world. I've taught in 24 countries.
Wow.
And my books are translated into like 12 languages. But I have been going to China for the last, 6 years until COVID.
When you say China, do you go to Shanghai or Beijing? Where do you go?
Beijing, Shanghai, Xi'an, Hong Kong.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I've taught in many, many different cities. And, the market's different in Hong Kong than it is in mainland. And so what I would do is I would hit one of the mainland cities and then I would go to Hong Kong. And I hit a mainland city and go to Hong Kong because then we could absorb the travel costs easier, by splitting it out. And it was easier for the people in Hong Kong because they're not as big an audience because it's a small subset, And people in China, of course, don't want Hong Kong to be called separate. So I have to be careful. But they're so continental compared to China that it's those
Taiwan.
People.
Taiwan is.
No, I'm not talking about Taiwan. I'm talking about Hong Kong.
Oh, Hong Kong. Excuse me.
Hong Kong. Yeah. And I taught in Taiwan for a long time too. But then once I started teaching in China, it kind of took over my schedule. So anyway, yes, there's a huge market and I have many, 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 many good students and certified guides in China.
Oh, that's right. You certify teaching intuitives, I guess. What has happened during this COVID period for your trainings? Have you been...
We just went online.
Yeah, I was going to say Zoom is a wonderful tool, isn't it?
We just started teaching online and kept going.
That's amazing. I mean, in some ways, it's still good because the technology allows for a crisp image to come across and you have this beautiful background. You can change your backgrounds. So in many ways, it's great. But you have to admit there's something about being there in person that is
very
valuable.
Huge, yeah. And the students, they love the personal presence, the personal contact. So, that's what's important. And so we're working towards it. We keep making a plan and then we push it off. We make a plan and we push it off. So
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know when I'll go back, but
I know
it's on the books.
I had to cancel a trip to, actually it's a longer story than that. I was supposed to be in Egypt in May and I couldn't go. And it was devastating because, that is a very sacred place. So let's hope for things to get back to normal soon. When did you become aware of the Akashic Records, the Akashic Field? I mean, you are sensitive. So I'm sure Edgar Casey's story was very focused in your mind, but when did you begin wanting to delve into the whole energetics behind and understanding the Akashic field?
Well, sometime in my early 20s, first of all, as a child, I read There Is a River and the other Casey books. My mother had told me about him, and so I explored that. I was very interested in esoteric matters as a child. Other kids were reading kind of books. I was into the lives of the saints. So in my 20s, I remember getting a message that there would come a time that humanity wouldn't rely on their memories, but they would tap into energy cosmically and bring in information that way. And I remember telling people about this. Yeah, this is how it's going to be. And in hindsight, I know that's the Akashic Records. That's when I was first exposed to the Akashic Records. Although at the time, I didn't know that that's what it was called, if that makes sense. And then later, I was given access. And I was told by one of my guides that I was being given access to a dimension that had been closed to humanity for eons. And this will make you laugh because, you know, I worked with that and I paid attention to that. And then one day my curiosity got the better of me. And so I said, well, am I the only one who's been given access to this dimension? And the answer was no. I was laughing at myself because, oh yeah, like I'm really special. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the answer really was no, but you are a guide. You are to help others get there. Hmm. And so that's when I recognized that I needed to start to teach it and to create a program for people to get certified and up to speed. And, that's been very exciting. Go ahead.
So my understanding, and I use today's terms, and in fact, I mentioned before we started, I had Irvin Laszlo on a few weeks ago. I mentioned to him that my interpretation of the Akashic Records were cloud. It was a cloud computing database, right? I mean, this is very easy for people to kind of get cloud computing because that's what we work with, right? But how do you define the Akashic Records or the Akasha, which is the Hindu term for it? Where is it? How do you define it and describe it for us?
Okay. So first of all, that's very interesting because in Laszlo's book, he describes Akasha as everything that is alternative. And he, in that book that he wrote, he invited a number of other authors to participate. And my favorite author is Bill Gladstone in that book. So read that chapter if you have the book. That one just came out. I think it's the one before that.
Okay.
Because you find the one that's got Bill Gladstone in it. I thought his contribution was the best. But I don't share his gross generalizations. It's kind of like calling every facial tissue a Kleenex. We do it, but we don't necessarily prefer that. So it's kind of like it's easy to refer to everything that's supernatural as Akasha. It isn't so. The Akashic Records are a specific field of energy. Now, the Sanskrit word Akasha stands for sky. So it makes sense that we would call the Akashic Records something in the sky, like you did with a cloud computing. There's a very well-known teacher that I also admire that said that the Akashic Records were in the DNA. And I remember thinking, no, that's not right. They're in the 11th dimension. So then I asked the record keepers, what's the deal? Why would this remarkable teacher say this? I don't think he's a fraud. So what does that mean that he's saying it's in your DNA? And the record keepers had something brilliant to say. And they said, it's like this. Your local library has resources. And that's your DNA. Your local library is here in your DNA. But the big library of the universe and of all interactions with each other and in past lives and so on are in the big library, the main branch. Isn't that great?
I love it.
So, so the 11th dimension is the vibrational data set. We can't even call it a location anymore, because now that we understand vibration, we know that if we can shift vibration, we're in a different place. And so are we calling that a location, or are we calling it a different data set? So I'm choosing to use the word data set to help people get it, that you can be right where you are and connected to that other place. Yeah. And the reason that you and I can do this today is because a dispensation was given to allow all of humanity to access this database. Now, why would they do such a thing? Two reasons. Number one, we're in end times and we're transforming our reality to a new reality. And number two, it's like an open book test. So when you go into a science exam, you take your science calculator or your book of tables, and it's called an open book test. So what happens is, when you have choices and you access the Akashic Records, they help you see the benefits of certain choices that you might not see. They also help you see and understand the reality you are living in. And I'll give you an example. One time on a radio show, a man called in and he explained that, you know, his newly adult daughter was still acting out, you know, awful stuff towards him. And he felt that he'd been a good father. He was a meditator. He, you know, taught some spiritual stuff, and he couldn't comprehend why she would be this way. And the record keeper said, "You were arch enemies in a past life." And yeah, you continued to advance and she did not. And so in this lifetime, you agreed to sponsor her. And that means holding space for where she's at.
That's such great therapy. I love hearing that. I wish more people had that kind of therapy, because that's kick butt therapy, where they're directing reincarnation into a person's relationship issues. And it's really probably clarifying what's going on for that person.
Exactly. And then they said, this may take a while for her to step up. And so you need to, you know, it's going to be a couple of years, and you need to love her anyway. That means you continue to do what you would normally do as a parent. If you buy gifts for their birthday or holidays, whatever, continue to do that. Send cards, notes, texts, whatever you would do. And don't put an expectation that anything's going to come back. Love her anyway.
Yeah.
Pretty powerful and pretty fabulous advice, because when you get that kind of information, like you said, oh, I don't have to worry about it. It's nothing I did.
Yeah.
Nothing I did.
Yeah. You know, the problem with a lot of this material is that we live in a society that's very linear and scientific based. And if we can't see it, we can't touch it, we can't manipulate it with our eyes open, then it doesn't exist. And these subtle energies have been with us as part of humanity. It's part of who we are. And one of the amazing things about Casey is that people forever thought he was just an amazing psychic. But when he actually identifies the Akashic Records, he called them the Book of Life. What do you find is the most remarkable aspect of Casey? Here's this very simple guy, high school education, who was able to help 14,000 people or give readings to 14,000 people during his lifetime, which I guess he was giving readings from 1920s to his death in 1945.
The most remarkable thing I think about him is that he was a traditional Christian.
Yeah.
And not believe in reincarnation. And it wasn't until in a reading that he was given information about his past lives and what he had done in other lifetimes that he began to change his opinion. So he did change his opinion to believe in reincarnation. Think about it. Back in the 30s and 40s, that would be so counterculture.
Yeah.
And for him to transform himself personally is remarkable. And the other thing that I really admire about Casey is he went with it. He was put into some very challenging situations, and he had to decide if he was going to take the leap. And he did. And finally, the best part of Casey, somehow they had the foresight to record everything. You know, you can go into the Casey website and look up any disease, any physical problem, any mental problem, and there is a reading that they can match you to.
Yeah.
And the fact that they recorded and archived it, and it's now available to you and I, is so spectacular.
Thank God they did that. In the turn of the century, when technology was around, there's very few recordings of it. I have a short recording of him giving a reading to somebody, but there's very few actual audio recordings of him. Thank God he had what do they call it? A stenographer, someone right. who's writing it all down.
Yeah. You know, and it's so funny because today we're in an information glut, and, you know, you find some teacher that you like and you watch a couple of their videos. You don't watch all of it. And nobody has, very few teachers out there have archived every single thing they've done. And even I chose to pitch a lot of the stuff that I had done, you know, video, et cetera, because I thought this moment is the most important one. Today, this moment is the most important one. And all that other stuff, you know, maybe it's better today. I don't know. But I chose to, you know, just let it all go and create space for something brand new that's coming in. So, yeah. And a lot of it comes in through the records, yeah. You know. Now, there's a couple of things that you have touched on that I want to make sure we talk about, because I think it's really important. One of the things is, how do you know you're in the records? And what are the tools to use to get into the records?
We're definitely going to go to the tools. So we're going to cover that in a minute. I'm giving, just to give you a heads up, I want to get the foundation, your understanding of it. You said something very interesting that I want to touch on, which is the gatekeeper said, we have not released this until now. It's been shut off for eons. That is extremely important for our listenership, because we talk about pre-Diluvian people, and I am a Mayanist, and I'm writing about the Maya right now. The Maya had a technology that is so advanced that we're just coming up to it right now. And we're not talking the Maya that the conquistadors saw. We're talking about a proto-Maya. But I'm not going to get into that now. Let's talk a little bit. I don't want to cut you off. I don't want you to give it up ahead of time. I want you to
good. And yeah. I'm very interested in your Maya stuff, because I have a past life in that time.
Oh, my God. A lot of us do. A lot of us do. Yeah.
So where do you want to go?
Let's go back real quickly. You are the first one I've heard talk about, and you write about these gatekeepers. Give me your understanding of the language that comes across as, this has not been available until now. And why, first of all, why? And my guess is that the previous civilization had full access to this field and developed extremely high levels of science and technology based on the natural occurring earth energies and things like that. So define the gatekeepers, define unavailable for eons.
Okay. So first of all, I want to explain that humanity tends to think of things in linear terms.
Yes.
And what I want to say about all that is that when we came into existence, we first came in as etheric beings. So it wasn't like we had access to that. It's that we were at that level where the information was readily available. So it's a little bit different than the way we kind of define it today. Today, we dropped even deeper into the fog or the mist, if you will, and couldn't see or access that information. So that was a conscious choice to become more fogged over, if you will, to have experiences that would limit our ability to know all the good choices. And then we had some interference with beings who wanted to take over our planet. And they started feeding data that into the reality that would not serve us, you know, teaching us that I have to be in competition with you. We're both authors, like that, you know, total BS, but stuff that people fell for because they couldn't tell that it wasn't real, that it wasn't true. So there's a lot of, as you say, you know, big mess in our reality right now. And that's why you're, you know, you're working with that other information to help people understand, oh yeah, there was a civilization that had full access because they were at a different level of evolution. What we're doing now is breaking through that fog and mist and opening up to a 3D body that is fully plugged into all of it. That's never been done before. And so we reached a point, I'm going to call it the 51% point, where humanity was able to establish that they were going to make it, or they had a pretty strong likelihood they were going to make it. You know, I've heard stories that one of my sons said, you know, they give you the hardest college courses they can the first 2 years. So you get as many kids to flunk out as possible, so that the only, the really good ones are there for the last 2 years, which are super easy. I thought it was a very interesting concept because it had not occurred to me that that's how it's done. But I can see in hindsight, that's true. So where we're at now is we're at the place where humanity has established that they're ready and willing to shift consciousness enough to amplify their God sense, their divine connection in a physical body. And that's never been done as a humanity. We've seen a few masters become masters in their body, but they're few and far between. Now, why was this gift given, or why was this dispensation created? And the answer is because we were at that place where we're at the end of this cycle, and humanity has proven that they're almost ready, a helping hand was given. It's kind of like if you're in college and you tell your rich uncle, you know, I'm doing great in school, but I'm not going to be able to go back next year because mom and dad ran out of money. The rich uncle is going to say,
the help was given in the form of this amazing past, present, and future database, the Akashic Records.
Potential futures.
Okay.
Futures not set.
Fascinating. And just real quickly, in your book, you say that we're at a refresh point because after 26,000 years, the Maya cycle is coming to an end, and we're becoming refreshed or reborn. Correct?
Yes.
Okay.
So we're at that cycle where we're going to go up a level, and that upper level is all of us becoming the walking, talking, ascended masters.
Okay.
Experiences at that level. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Do you have, or have you found reference to the Akasha or the Akashic records in dynastic Egypt, the Inca, the Maya, or other ancient civilizations that you intuitively feel they had a link with this Akashic records?
I have a strong connection to Egypt, and I believe that the priests, the sages and the wise men and the Hathors were present in that reality to support their spiritual evolution in Egypt. I think, but I don't know, that that's also true in other early civilizations like the pre-Diluvian, Peruvian,
yeah,
or other, again, but keep in mind that they hadn't descended into the mist so deeply.
Mm-hmm. But do you think what you're teaching, I find, is a form of evolution, but in these earlier cultures, I sometimes have a feeling, especially if you go to some of these temples, these Egyptian temples, or some special places in Yucatan, that these were places of divination, and also places where the general population could get a sense of the higher realms.
I think that that's true, because you can't, you can go, when you go to those places, you can't help but feel a different energy and feel inspired. So you're right. The location supported, amplified the ability for connectivity.
Right. All right. Before we get into some teaching techniques, because this is the beauty of your work, I want you to tell us who you feel is tapped in to the Akashic fields. Now, I would think, we already talked about Edgar Cayce. We talked about Tesla. How about somebody modern who you feel is tapped in, like perhaps Elon Musk or one of these visionary people that, rather than talking the talk, they're actually putting into creation their data?
Boy, that's a tough one. I think there are a lot of people that are tapped in. Everyday people like you and I, and people in visible leadership positions.
Give us an example, though, of somebody who is impacting people, and that, if you know, as someone who's an intuitive who works with this library, you can say, well, wow, they really pulled that book out of the shelf, and that is a real impactful or futuristic idea. I mean, I might be throwing you a curve right now, because you're like going, dude, I live in the field. I live here. I walk the halls all the time.
I don't know. I am told constantly by people that I'm at the cutting edge. I don't know anybody that fits that description.
Okay.
And I don't mean to be self-serving, but I know for a fact that there are moments of what I would call lucidity for many, many people. And every day I'm praying for the leaders in America. I'm praying for our military. I'm praying for, you know, the people that are in a position to help us. One of my free guided meditations is called Divine Government Meditation. And it asks us to pray for all the people in every leadership position everywhere, that they get connected to their divine self. And we're holding space for that. So I believe that everybody is getting a little bit of that right now. That's also why I also will say that you could tap into the Akashic records without knowing that that's what you were doing.
See, that's what I want. That's what I believe happens, is that they don't know. They've pierced the veil and they're walking the halls and they're pulling books off the shelf, accessing that data, but they don't consciously recognize it.
Right. And that's to me, that's a big it's a little bit of a disconnect, because
yeah,
it's not, you know, there's a certain fine line that we must walk as we become known for what we're teaching, that keeps us out of ego. And so if a person is a thought leader, let's say, and they're getting all these ideas, they might think they're all coming from within their head instead of recognizing the difference. And that's one of the things that I teach. Now, to speak to that, this is somebody that's completely random that just popped in my head to answer your question. And that's Seth Godin. Do you know who he is? He writes a blog called Seth. Yeah. He writes a blog called Seth's Blog. And this guy is positively brilliant. And there's a few times that I didn't agree with his conclusions, but most of the time I feel like this guy is so spot on that he's grasping some very big ideas and bringing them in and showing us the dichotomy or the similarity, and how can we use that in our everyday life? I think that's pretty cool. And so he would be somebody that I would say, you know, he's tapped in. Whether he recognizes it or not, he's tapped in. And I'm not buying 100% of everything he says, but enough of it that I feel comfortable saying that. And that probably is true of everybody. You know, once in a while, even I question, am I putting out my own opinion, or am I putting out what the record keepers are saying? So, you know, even that self-examination is important. And that's probably the number one question people ask when they learn how to open the record. How do I know I'm not making it up?
Yeah, we'll get to that. That's interesting. You know, one of the examples of a great musician who I believe had direct access, and they always used to say, well, he was working with the gods or whatever, was Mozart. And he wrote at a very young age, not only brilliant sonatas, symphonies, and so on, but one of the things I always thought was quite peculiar was that he wrote in a way that was complete. What he put down was never edited. He wrote major symphonies from start to finish, like he was getting the information dictated to him. So I think of somebody like that.
Beethoven the same.
Yeah, they're locked in. They have a plug into the Akashic fields. What do you think of that?
And the emphasis on Beethoven is that he lost his hearing at the end of his life. And so he was still writing major symphonies and hearing them in his head, but not elsewhere.
Yeah, amazing. Totally amazing.
It is amazing. Yeah. Totally amazing.
All right, let's get into it. So you teach people how to access the Akashic records. In general, what state of mind does an individual have to be in to begin the process? They can't be worrying about money or their relationship, or maybe they can, but tell us how they begin.
Well, I teach people to do what I call an opening prayer so that they can ask for help from their angels and guides and whoever they pray to. I ask for them to get centered in the four directions and the four elements. So I ask people to do some kind of a very specific type of opening prayer where they basically announce, I'm on the side of source. I'm on the side of the light, whatever that means to them. And what it does is it sets a stage for them to feel centered and grounded and peaceful. So even if they're worried about stuff, I often tell people, you know, if you've got a bunch of questions you want to ask in the records, write those down first. Then do your opening prayer and then do your ceremony to open the records. And there is a little ceremony to open the records. And one of the things that I emphasize that no one else does, and there's lots of good teachers out there, by the way, and that is that we will only work with beings of 100% God light.
100%.
And so there are levels of
100% God light.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 100% God light. Okay. And that's because,
as compared with compromised energy, you see.
Oh, okay.
Or service to self energy, you see. So, you know, we're going to the highest place in the Akashic records possible, which makes it easier to get good information. And I've had feedback from some of my students who were told by their clients that, you know, I've had readings from this person, this person, this person, but yours was the most plugged in. And my student, also a guide, you know, a professional, said, I think it's because of what you teach, not just me, you know, being special. In other words, she feels, because she'd studied with those other teachers and then she studied with me, so she had a point of reference mm-hmm. when she made that comment. Because I feel very strongly that you have to do your own spiritual work in general. So it isn't just what state of mind are you in this moment of opening the records, but are you doing your work on a regular basis? You know, mm-hmm. this is not, you know, it's not like going to the gym once a week.
Yeah. So it sounds to me also that somewhere in there, and I think it's in your book, that the intention, setting an intention is also important. So you're about to enter, you're closing your eyes, you ask for guidance from the godlike pure beings, and then it's like, I intend to access the records or what? What's the next step?
Well, first of all, we don't close our eyes. And every once I get into it with people say, well, I get a much better connection when my eyes are closed. And I said, I'm sure you do. But you are learning a new skill. And the new skill says that you're fully present here and connected up there. And that's a new skill that makes you multidimensional in that moment because you're choosing to stay fully anchored here. So closing your eyes is a big no-no in my school.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I'm not saying you shouldn't close your eyes to get intuitive information. I'm saying that when you're in the Akashic Records, you don't close your eyes because you want to stay fully present in this reality and then receive from a higher place. But then you feel the contrast. And I teach people how to feel that contrast by asking, you know, their wisdom channel or their higher self the same question, and then you ask in the records. And you can see the difference. And that contrast helps people discern, oh, that's not me. That's the record keepers.
Okay. So your eyes are open. You're asking permission to enter this. Who are the record keepers? How do they assist in leading someone into their own records?
Okay. So first of all, there are multiple different kinds of beings in the Akashic Records. There are beings... The closest analogy I can give you is, do you remember the famous book Dune or the movie Dune?
Oh, yeah.
So the travelers, remember those ships that were actually beings? Okay, so that's what it's like. There are beings that embody the records that are fully present, but they are actually records holders, record energy. Mm-hmm. Okay. There are other beings that have chosen to quote work in the records as a point of interest or service. And then there are people, human beings, who were in the records, either as record keepers or some other service, that have embodied in human bodies and are now making that energy very, very available here. And they're also sometimes working as guides as well. I even had a person whose name was a complete acronym of Akashic Records. And she was the one who pointed it out to me and asked me, and the record keepers told her in a reading through me that she was from the Akashic Records. And at the time, she was quite young, and her boyfriend was terrified of this work and convinced her to step away from it completely. I'm sure she'll come back to it at some point. How could she be that high being and not? But that's, you know, neither here nor there. That was my observation. So... We in the training that I do, I ask, and it's also all everything I do is taught in the book as well. So I like people to learn the difference because initially, when we're intuitive, we can recognize times or moments in our life when we have insights that did not come from anything around us. They just like pop in. And when it happens enough, we conclude, oh, I'm getting intuitive information. And then you begin to recognize how that is or what that feels like, just to recognize someone's voice before you might see who it is on the phone. So that's the first layer. And then after that, I give people what I call markers. And I have identified a dozen or so markers that most people have. Now, this gets to be very cool, but I'll give you some of the markers. One of them is, I call it the hammock effect. And that's this immense feeling of well-being and you're cherished and loved. And it's hard to describe until you're in the records and you have this experience. Mm. Another marker is pressure on the chest. And it doesn't hurt, but it definitely feels like there's, you know, like somebody or something pushing. And that's a marker that the record keepers, their presence is like right here. And then another energy that people feel is on one side or the other, and they actually feel it come in. Another marker is the way they talk. And the record keepers will never say anything harsh. So let's say you were really obnoxious to your mother yesterday. And now you're feeling bad and you're asking in the records, you know, was I really out of line or was I just a little bit crabby? And the record keepers would say, you know your mother very well. Your mother is a good person and you were cross with her for pestering you about XYZ. What you want to understand is that her pestering is because she loves you and cares about you. And if you will receive that as a piece of information when she gives it to you instead of a criticism of you, you will receive it better and you won't be so cross with her. Never once were you told you were the bad guy. Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Like that. And yeah. When they criticize, when people convey a message of criticism, you're not in the records. And there is a quality mm-hmm. of people that are, you hear my voice going froggy, this is a tough one. There are some people who are accidentally conveying critical information that is critical to the client that isn't high. It's coming from their personality, their ego, or their entities.
You mean a reading they're giving to their client of the they're tapping in for their client. Mm-hmm. Wow. I've been meditating for 30 years, so what you're talking about isn't that much of a departure from my practice. But there's so many people who have never meditated, who don't know what it means to quiet the mind, to sit idly and allow this to come through. How do you work with or suggest to people who have no relationship with that experience? How would they get to a place where they can even consider that form of divination?
So there's two things I want to say to this. Number one, I call that monkey mind. The people who just have been, even if they wanted to, they couldn't get it to stop, right? So there's that element. And I developed all those guided meditations to help people be stepped down and to quiet the mind because they're listening to someone's direction. And there's a little bit of music, there's instruction. Sometimes there's repeat after me or fill in the blank, you know, like that. So there's a lot of interactive stuff in those guided meditations that help people get there, that want to get there. Because a lot of people who have dismissed this, I haven't dismissed it because they don't believe it. They've dismissed it because they've never been able to quiet their mind. So that's why the guided, you know, there's a lot of different kinds of meditation, and certainly they're very valuable. But I have found that the people I'm working with are very mental and they have a good, strong mind and they really need to have the stepping down. So I do recommend that people pick up some of the meditations, and I always have something free on my website, so there's no reason not to. The second thing is the energy of the Akashic Records is so powerful that even when you think you're not intuitive, even when you think you can't get it, even when you think this stuff is hocus pocus, when you open to the records, it comes through in such a powerful way, it is undeniable. And I've had more than one person say to me, I can't believe what comes out of my mouth. I can't believe what I'm telling, either, you know, writing for myself or telling a client. I had a man tell me, one of my guides tell me, I started doing this work and all of a sudden, once I'm in the records, and I don't know what I'm going to say to this person, it just starts happening.
So he's got the key. That type of a person sounds like they're locked in. Okay. So are there rules to working with the Akashic Records? Are there specific questions you can and cannot ask?
Okay, so rules in the Akashic Records are primarily regarding time. You know, I teach people don't keep the records open while you're having lunch. Don't do a bio break without closing the records and then opening them again. It takes a few seconds to open the records, close the records, because when you stop to do that, you might stop and take care of the mail or whatever. Same is true with just about anything. If you know it's the FedEx guy at the door and you got to receive his package, take your book with you. And that's another one of the rules. I require that everybody have a journal of some sort and that they write the date in it. They write the questions out. If they're reading for themselves, if they're reading for somebody else, they would write the client's name. There's some basic how we operate kind of rules. So we have certain ethics. I also ask people who get certified by me to agree to our code of ethics, which is in the back of my book. And it's pretty straightforward, but it recognizes that our job is service-based, not about me. And that's very important too, because there could be a tendency for it to be about me until you get in the records, and then the record keepers kind of take over and then it becomes easy. And I know you said the guy that I was just talking about was tapped in, but I will tell you that if you did everything that I say in this book, you would be able to instantly start to open the Akashic records.
Truly. So what you're saying is the book offers etheric keys that you press by reading and by beginning to say, I would like to be able to use these records, please.
Well, you know, you could do that, but there is a momentum in you using a specific prayer that I give in the book.
The prayers are the key, right?
Yeah.
And again, it's the intention. I'm using this for the highest purpose, blah, blah, blah. Right. I mean, you don't go in there and go, hey, how can I win a million? Where do I find the rule, the keys to $1 million? Where do I mean, that kind of weighty physical stuff isn't there. Right.
Well, you know, the questions that a person could ask are multiple. The number one thing that is not going to get answered is about the future. What's happening in the future? Will I meet my beloved? You know, the record keepers might say, it's coming. They might give a date, but if you ask for a date, they won't give it. It's a little bit complicated. For example, I had a regular client who on her last question that month said, oh, by the way, I'm moving to a new apartment here in the city. And I'm getting a 2-bedroom and I'm renting it out to this friend of a friend. How's that going to work out? And the record keeper said to her, it'll be fine until the luster wears off. Now, that's another way you know you're in the records. I had never used the word luster in conversation, okay? And so, you know, it's a word that you know in your vocabulary, but it's not part of common language. That's how you know it's the record keepers. So she said, luster? What luster? What does that mean? Does that mean he's not going to stay? And the record keeper said, yes, that's true. And she said, well, when will they leave? And they named a month. It was 2 months from now. And so she said, of what year? Because in her mind, she could not comprehend that she would actually rent to someone. And then 2 months later, they'd be gone. Okay. So then she said, well, maybe I shouldn't rent to him. And the record keeper said, no. Allow this experience to occur, because it will lead you to the roommate of your dreams. And what happened is the whole thing blew up. The guy got involved in drugs, got fired from his job, had to go back to his former city. And she ended up with a new roommate that they were chums. They got along. They had movie night once a week. Cool stuff. Now, what's interesting about that is if you've already been told it's going to blow up in your face, you're not as likely to get as freaked out about it as you would if you didn't know. You know, if you have somebody you've trusted into your home and then they mess up, you're like freaking out. Now what am I going to do? All that stuff. Whereas if you've been told it's leading you to the roommate of your dreams, and why was it the roommate of her dreams? Because that woman that became her roommate wasn't looking until 2 months later.
Yeah,
so it gave that's a great, original
great story. Yeah.
Yeah, and it makes so much sense, doesn't it? Because it's this is what the record. This is why the records have been made available to us, so that we would have enough information that we could always react to a difficult situation with open hearts. Yeah. That's the bottom line, truly.
I want to talk just for a minute about the process. So here, it's not you, or it can be you, tapping in on some level without the ceremony. But what you teach is the opening prayer, and intuition. And then here's these gatekeepers that are providing data. Now, just to be between you and me, I have to be honest. It's like if I started hearing voices in my head, I'd go, what the hell is that all about? But, and the other thing is it my own voice I'm hearing? And I'm sure you get all this. You've been teaching so long, you probably get guys go, hey, am I schizophrenic or what? But the truth of the matter is, and you tell me about this, is it that you do it enough and you begin to hear these gatekeepers and their voices become familiar and you accept the data as not your own higher self, your intuition, your guidance. There's a definite recognition of the Akashic keepers of the data.
Well, I think you ask a very good question. And the answer is that it happens very gradually. So initially, you don't trust it. Initially, you don't believe it could possibly be true. But then what I do is I take people through a list of all the markers within the channeled message that comes through. And, you know, this gentleness, which I call the hammock effect, the choice of words, which is a language expansion, because there's words that you and I know, but we've never used them in regular language, or we've used them very little. And there's also a quality of like a grandma talking to you in a really sweet way. So there's a quality that becomes very distinctive. Now, the number one thing that a lot of people say is, but the message is very similar to what I'm getting when I tap into my own guidance. And initially that's true. And it's because your own guidance was tapping into the records, but you would always season it with your own biases. Whereas in the records, it comes through without bias, without judgment. And as that starts to happen, it becomes abundantly clear that it is the record keepers. I have clients who told me that they go into the Akashic Records for themselves every single day because that yummy feeling is better than a drug.
Yeah.
They find it that nurturing.
Yeah.
So it is very understandable. I tell people it's normal to doubt what's coming in. But what happens is the more you do it, and that's what I meant when I said it happens very gradually, the clearer the channel becomes. And it is possible to be, you know, in and out, you know, to say one thing that's brilliant and then another thing that's very human. And so the conscious channel has to make an effort. And one of the reasons why you can go in and out is if you have entities or you have energies in you that are preventing you from getting a good connection. So one of the things I teach is clearing work. And how important it is to keep yourself clear from all kinds of stuff.
Right. No, that makes sense. Tell me the difference between accessing the Akashic Records and inspiration that comes artistically for a musician, an artist, even somebody who's a physicist writing formulas, who after weeks or months of deliberation or whatever, finally get that aha moment that information comes through. And I think this is Tesla. And I have to ask you a question about the future data too, but the two different areas of downloads, how do you define those?
Well, for example, Einstein talked about riding the light wave and that he would meditate on what it was like to be riding on light, on the waves of light, which is how he got his E equals MC squared theory, his theory of relativity. So in those places, they're tapping into the higher dimensions, no question. And at some point, that may be the Akashic Records. But there are dimensions that are devoted to science. There are dimensions that are devoted to spiritual wisdom. And they might be tapping into those dimensions as well. They're definitely breaking through the 3D barrier that we all live under to stay there and to get that information. And in the case of Einstein, for example, my belief is that his constantly knocking on that door of what's it like to be a beam of light, where, you know, all that, opened that door. Because he kept looking. So it was his persistence and his willingness to receive. Mm-hmm. Many, many stories of inventors, especially, who have received information in a dream. You know, remember how we always had these great big satellite dishes? The inventor of the small ones had the formula come to him in a dream on the anniversary of his father's death. So he was in an emotional state, remembering his father's death. That opens the gateways for sure, being in an emotional state. And then because he'd been knocking on that door on how to do that, it just popped in his head. And it was like, whoa, why didn't he get this in the first place? And that's the fractal compression technology that is used today for compressing all kinds of data.
Okay. So you just opened a new door, which is there's other dimensions that have data that come through in dreams and other states of consciousness. It seems to me what you're saying is that the Akashic field, you need to actually ask permission and work with these keepers in a way, and they grant you the data on that level.
I think that's an accurate assessment. For sure, you don't go into records without asking. Like I said, it is a dispensation. Mm-hmm. So a person that's regularly accessing the records, they might get information directly from the records, but that's because they've established a relationship with them. Just like if you and I were on the phone every day, pretty soon, if you had an idea for me, you'd just call me and tell me. You wouldn't wait for me to ask. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there is that quality that anybody who's doing the work in the Akashic Records have access to it all the time, even when they don't go through the motions of the ceremony. What the ceremony does is twofold. It as you mentioned earlier, quiets the mind. It sets the intention. It creates that air of expectancy. And the second thing it does is treats it as special, meaning this is not a, we don't walk around with our records open trying to live our life. We access this data resource to live a better life. So it's okay. A purposeful accessing of this information.
Talk really quickly again about why these records, this field, this Akasha is now available to us at this point. And I think you said it succinctly when you said, we're at a point now where we're rebooting physicality and whatever that means, the various dimensions of who we are now. But talk a little bit about the why this information is being accessed. It sounds to me like on some level, the energies, the gods or whatever are saying, okay, you're ready to evolve or something. Because it sounds like an evolutionary tool.
You talked about the Mayan evolutionary calendar, and we are facing at the end of the Kali Yuga, and we're phasing up to the next yuga.
Yeah.
And that next yuga is an expansion towards God.
I'm so glad you're using the yugas. I love the yugas. They're rejected by orthodoxy, but I love them. I think they're amazing.
Yeah. So this is now, in other words, half of the cycle we go outward towards a new level of creation, and then the other half of the cycle we descend and go dark, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And we are now at the end of this era, and we need to clean up to act. You know, a fun way to explain it is to say, you know, if you've ever been in a big family, and you were, and your family's going on a big trip, or even it's just an adventure to the water park or something, you get the baby in the car, you know, and the older kids are still playing video games. You got to get them off their games, finally get them in the car. And now the baby needs a diaper change. And so there's all this drama to get in the car to go. Okay. But we're not leaving without anybody. So that's kind of where we're at. We're at the place where there's a lot of people who are ready. There's a lot of people who are just killing time, you know, and just participating in the reality the way it is. And as soon as everybody else is ready to go, they're fine. They'll jump in the car and go.
Why is the future off limits? Is it because it's malleable and it can go either way? Or is it because that they just don't want people to see too far in advance because it's constantly changing, or what?
All of the above. First of all, the future isn't exactly off limits. But what is understood by humanity is that if I say, you know, you're going to, your book's going to be a bestseller and you're going to be a millionaire, there is an air of expectation.
Exactly.
If it doesn't happen, you're going to be disappointed. So there's that aspect. But more importantly, what if you have to make certain decisions along the way so that it will become the bestseller? And if you're not given those opportunities, you might pass on them or blow them off, or, you know, decide the heck with it, you know? So there, the quality of free will is extremely important right now. And the most important thing is to understand that God doesn't judge us, and that free will is about either choosing a choice that takes us higher or to making a choice that doesn't. Now, you notice I didn't say bad or wrong, because the truth is we're gonna make it. You know, the big outcome is already finished. We know we're going to make it. We're nowhere as a society, a reality, whatever. We're going to make that ascension. We're going to have that breakthrough. Is everybody going to make it with us? Hopefully, yes. This is why we don't pray for just ourselves. We should be praying for everybody. This is why a lot of my meditations, I tell people in the guided meditation, okay, now that you've asked for yourself, ask for, you know, somebody you care about, somebody you love, somebody you're worried about. Because part of our transformation is moving from a self serving society to a society where we are interested in the self and others equally, not less than in either case, but equally concerned about each other. You know, it's like if you get up early and you have somebody that's, you know, in the next bedroom, you try to be quiet so you don't disturb them. But if you're just self-serving, you don't even think about that. You don't even know you're making it up.
Yeah.
So it's very important that we understand that the real reason that the record keepers have been given the opportunity to give this dispensation is so that we can be the most loving human beings we can. And the more knowledge we have about what's really happening, the easier it is to be loving. If you have a best friend that missed meeting you for lunch and they're always late and they're always got some stupid excuse, but you love spending time with them because they're so much fun. If they don't show, you're going to be mad because you think, dang it, they blew you off again. But if they call you and say, oh my God, I'm in the hospital, my mother's dying, blah, 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 all of a sudden your concern on why they stood you up melts away with concern about them. And that's what we're talking about. That's the kind of knowledge that you'll get instantly in the records.
I love that. That's a great example. The book's called Opening the Akashic Records, Meet Your Record Keepers, and Discover Your Soul's Purpose. My guest has been Maureen J. St. Germain. Before I let you go, give us a case study of somebody who was surprisingly acute at being able to read, or the Akashic field, or somebody who you ran into who seemed to be exceedingly lucid when it came to reading the field or whatever.
I can tell you that this happens regularly, that people who don't believe that they can do this, but they want to do it, they are curious, but they don't think they can do it. And then they kind of get their feet to the fire when they take a class with me, because we partner them with people after they've done level one, learned for themselves, and they learned for reading others. And I can tell you, you know, it's like you're terrified. I'm going to screw it up. But, you know, this person's new like me, so it's a good person to practice on, you see. And over, what happens is even the people who had the biggest doubt come out with such eloquence, and they look at the words that came through, whether they're reading for themselves or somebody else, but they look at the words that were written, or they, you know, hear back in the recording what was said, and they go, I didn't know I could talk that well. And the minute they say that, I laugh and say, it wasn't you. Get over it. It wasn't you.
Yeah.
It was the record keepers. And that's the biggest aha, is when you observe yourself in the records. Actually, it's usually after the fact. You've closed the records. You're now looking at what you've written. You know, I'm in the records for myself as well. I'll share with you something they told me. I fell recently, and I'm recovering from that blow to my bones. I don't have much bruising, but I have a lot of physical pain. So I said, what is the big message to pass on to others with regard to what I experienced? And they said, take it slow. You are on rough seas. It may seem important to rush to the shore, but the important work is done at sea. You may think you are safer at shore, but that too could be an illusion. Experienced ocean goers go further out to sea when there's a tsunami coming, and go to anchor when it's a storm. Know where you are and what you need to do. Don't push. Instead, move slowly in a clockwise motion, and be sure to keep asking your dragons and your angels for assistance and direction.
Interesting. Fascinating. Hey, it's been really fun. Tell people how they can get a hold of you. What's your website again?
My website is MaureenSaintGermain.com.
Okay. Go ahead. And I understand you have some courses. You actually have an Akashic Records course coming up. Why don't you tell people how they can get more information, and if they're interested, how they can sign up?
The course that I'm teaching is on Zoom. I will be teaching it live. Mm-hmm. You will have interaction with me directly. It is a lot of fun. It's called the Fast Track, because what we did is we compressed the teaching into 2 days, 4 hours each day. And then we teach an additional 2 days for the advanced class, which teaches you how to open someone else's records. Most people sign up for all 4 days, 4 hours each day. And we have so much fun. There's so much joy. Because when people read what they've gotten, and then it matches what somebody else got, and I jokingly will say, oh, well, you know, you copied from so-and-so. And of course, that was impossible because we're on Zoom, and they're in Australia and somebody else is in New York. You know, it's just fun. So you can take that class with me. We have lots of online courses you can take on your own. We have lots of guided meditations for lots of purposes. We have a collection of essential oil blends that you can use to help heal emotional wounds And these were channeled by Mary Magdalene. We also have, we can't see this very well, but anyway. We also have replays of a lot of programs that we've done. For example, I think that there's a replay of the Mary Magdalene event that I did because I taught a lot about sacred geometry and why Mary Magdalene, why I believe very strongly Mary Magdalene was the spouse of Jesus, for example. And you can also have a private session with me if you want. And because I train people, anybody who gets certified can join my program and receive clients from all over the world. So we have, at any given time, we have half a dozen or a dozen people that are in that program that are actively receiving clients.
Fantastic.
So we have a good program.
Yeah, yeah, you're totally locked in across the board. Fantastic. All right, those of you listening, you have access to begin working with this. And hey, Maureen's been great, and I really appreciate you being so open and forthright with the data. It's wonderful to hear.
It's my pleasure. And when I come back, we can talk about the dimensions because that's in that book.
Oh yeah, that's right. We'll have you back for Beyond the Flower of Life. Is that what you're referring to? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that just came out. Yeah, we'll have you back. Hopefully before the end of the year, but we'll have to see. So
yeah, we'll have to see. the year is just like a very interesting environment. So
very strange. All right.
Well, hey. I want to thank you for giving me the chance to talk about the Akashic Records because it is one of my most important subjects, and I am so grateful to have the opportunity and be part of your program. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, one of the other questions I should have asked, I kind of got it in there with my Mozart question is the Akashic Records also the muse that is the artistic muse that supports painting and music creation and even science? And I did touch on it a little bit. Maureen is applying a tool to actually consciously access these Akashic Records. And this is why I had her on the program, because I don't really know of, well, I mean, I'm sure there's other people out there doing similar work, but not to the level that she is. She's actually teaching it and evaluating how people are working with these keepers. So very, very insightful, interesting, and kind of fun too. I kind of enjoyed that. So I hope you did too. Hey, I'm heading to Mexico October 7th through the 17th. Mexico City is the epicenter of our tour. We're doing a 10-day tour of the ancient areas of Great Mexico. Remember, Mexico is the heart of many of North America's largest freestanding pyramidal structures, communities, and civilizations. And this is a chance to join me for a really in-depth look at why they would build these pyramids, what they were generating. You know, a lot of these places are energy generators. And most importantly, I've developed a technique where you can actually plug in. I call it plugging into the ancient sites. And with just a short intention, you can absorb healing energy, insight on your past, present, and future, as well as all kinds of other bits and pieces of information from the past. I just started using this technique, and we're going to use it in Mexico. We're going to teach people how to use it in Egypt next May. By the way, we'll be in Egypt May 3rd through the 15th, 2022. So if you want to join me for that, check it out. This is a real great opportunity to really have a sense of the ancient past. For more information, go to earthancients.com/tours, T-O-U-R-S, and you'll see the entire itinerary. We are about halfway full. We want to take about 20 to 25 people because we're going to go to some really unique places, and we want to be able to get in and out quickly with a smaller group. So again, it's the Sacred Pyramid Tour, October 7th through the 17th of this year. And we have made it really, really reasonable. It's usually about $5,000 5,000 US. We're making it very reasonable. We're only charging 2,500 or half price for the tour. Again, go to earthancients.com/tours. You can see the entire itinerary. So hope you can join us. All right, that's it for this program. And I want to thank Maureen St. Germain for her willingness to open completely and tell us about this program of tapping into the Akashic Records. As always, Ruth Thomas, our editing team, Mark Foster, and everybody else who makes Destiny possible. So great fun today, and hope you enjoyed it. We'll talk to you next week when we have another program. Have a good one.